No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Arizona Cardinals fans, once again to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. And for this edition, we're nearing the very, very end of actual football, and that's for everyone, not just the Cardinals. But I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. My co-host today, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also from the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, how is everything going?
Oh, good. Justin and I recorded a podcast tonight, so I'm doing double duty tonight, but you know, it's that time of the year for the draft, so we got to get two shows in a week now to make sure that we stop going over an hour and a half.
And we're going to try and do that with this show. I love doing the podcast, and I love talking football and Cardinals and everything like that. But, you know, I know probably the listeners probably don't necessarily want to listen to an hour and a half of this, you know, bloviate is what that's that fantastic word about the Cardinals and stuff. So let's go ahead and get started. This episode, we've got the NFL is down to the final two, the Atlanta Falcons and New England Patriots. So we're going to talk a little bit of the championship game results, what we thought of them, and in a little bit talking about the Super Bowl. Not a ton, because we've got that next week. We've got plenty to talk about in terms of content before we actually talk about what we specifically are going to go through in the last section of the show. But Dan Bickley from AZ Central and Arizona Sports writes for AZ Central, has the midday show on Arizona Sports 98.7. He had a fascinating column about a whole bunch of stuff from talking to Bruce Arians. And so there's a lot of stuff to digest. We're going to talk about that. You know, Larry Fitzgerald, Carson Palmer retiring. I don't know. Maybe talk about that. And for the final segment of the show, we'll even go into this, what we're going to talk about. We've both written about it on RevengeOfTheBirds.com and on CodgeBar.com. That would be the salary cap, potential cuts, savings that could be made. Who could the Cardinals cut to save some money? Who are potential cuts? Who is in danger of being cut? And you know, some for performance reasons, some for simply money reasons. But before we get started, we'll let you know that this episode, this edition of the Rise Up Seaward podcast, is brought to you by BlueApron.com. Blue Apron, which is the you know, if you're looking for, it's the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. If you're looking for a new way to cook, a new way to have home-cooked meals for your family, BlueApron.com is a great way to do it. You get restaurant-quality type meals and menus, and you get to learn how to do that. You give you exactly the recipe and exactly the ingredients that you need to be able to, you know, add to the home cooking that you do. We all want to eat more. We want to eat better. We want to eat delicious food. And oftentimes we end up stuck in a rut, whether it's eating out or just eating just stuff that's quick to prepare. If you're looking to improve your menu, if you're looking to improve the taste of your food and try to make a difference in the world, they've got the best ingredients. They've got 150 local farms, fisheries, or ranchers around the United States. Blue Apron's for you. Their food is great. I just finished my most recent meal, made some pork chops and garlic piccata over brown rice. And spinach. It was really good. I can't tell you how good it is. It's reasonably priced. Instead of going out and spending, you know, $10 to $15 a plate, you can prepare it at home with everything already there, all the ingredients, in a reasonable amount of time of preparation, and that's for less than $9 per serving. That's right. And if you would like to test out Blue Apron yourself, we've got a deal for you as Rise Up Sea Red listeners. Go to blueapron.com/red And you'll get the first three meals for free with free shipping, and you'll love how it tastes. You'll love how it feels. You'll be making incredible home-cooked meals with, you know, that look like you got them out of a restaurant. So don't wait. Go to blueapron.com/red, a better way to cook. And let's start, Seth, talking about the NFL playoffs. We're down to the final two. Is this what you expected? Yeah. Well, yes, the games were boring, but that doesn't mean they weren't intriguing, at least in my opinion. I found the games intriguing. If they weren't exciting, they weren't gripping. But as a football fan, it was very interesting to see, especially the Atlanta Falcons and how they just completely dismantled Green Bay.
Yeah, and you know, I wrote about this a little bit. It's sad that the Cardinals peaked in the wrong season again, right? Like, you look at 2015 Cardinals. Are they really worse than the 2016 Atlanta Falcons? I don't think
they. You know, they were a better overall team. They had the high scoring offense, but they had the defense to go with it. And well, Atlanta is better offensively, in my opinion. They are a better offensive team than what the Cardinals were in 2015.
Yeah, they're a more diverse offensive team. They have more talent in a lot of different places.
But defensively, the Cardinals were so superior, except in one area, and that was the pass rush. And you know, I think I expected the Falcons to win this game. And it was because I felt that Green Bay's defense just wasn't good enough. And to be able to stop, I mean, the Cardinals, who played some good defense during the year, the Atlanta offense just ate them apart. You know, we saw that game. They gave up. The Cardinals lost by three touchdowns to this team. Now, that's not to say that, you know, but you saw a lot of parallels to last year's NFC Championship game. The Panthers just blew the Cardinals out of the water early, and they never could recover. In fact, Cardinals actually scored before halftime. The Packers couldn't even do that.
And you know, my point being, maybe the Cardinals aren't really that far off if they have the health and the play that we were expecting from them. You know, if they can find that 2016 level again. But they have to be, it has to be in the right season. There can't be two dominant defensive teams in their way. Because I still am convinced they would have got run over by Denver in the Super Bowl as well. So, you know, you look at it and
Carson Palmer would have been killed. he might have retired after that game.
Yeah. So I think you end up, you know, If the 2015 Cardinals are in this season instead of the 2016 version, you know, maybe they're playing this weekend, but you know, it didn't work out that way. So it's a little frustrating. But and then the other game, New England, Pittsburgh, God, like seriously, like these games were just boring to watch because there was no. There's no intrigue after the first quarter.
Oh, it was very, very clear who the superior team was in both cases, which really was interesting to see. You know, in the Cardinals fan in me now, neither one of those teams, neither the Patriots nor the Steelers, are likable teams for fans in our market. And in the Cardinals fandom, you hate the Steelers. Simply because, if anything else, because of that Super Bowl. And, you know, the Patriots are just getting tired of them. Now, personally, this Super Bowl is great because, one, I either get to see the Falcons pull off a Super Bowl, something that they play a fun style of offense. Matt Ryan's likable. In fact, the former Cardinal, you've got Dwight Freeney to root for. You either get that or you get the Patriots getting to you get to see the interaction of Roger Goodell and the Patriots after they win, after what I consider the most ridiculous scandal of all time with the Deflategate, with the 4-game suspension 2 years after the fact. It's ridiculous, but I want to see that. And the fan in me outside, you know, I've kind of pulled away from some of the emotional hate I have towards a lot of teams, but to watch a player in my generation set all the records, have 5 Super Bowl rings, to have 7 appearances, just to see that. And I've kind of gotten over the part where I dislike the Patriots. I'm in awe of what they do.
I just dislike them because I get tired of watching the same team win every season.
Like, and plus, they beat the Seahawks, so I can't hate them.
Yeah, we owe them a debt of gratitude forever. So, but you know, it's frustrating, but it is what it is at this point. You know, you can't do anything about it. But you know, I just wish I hope the Super Bowl is an entertaining game.
And we'll talk more about this. I don't think it will be. I think it's going to be I think basically what we saw the Falcons do, if you remember way back in 1998, I think it's a repeat. You've got an up and coming team, young, inexperienced in terms of the playoffs, against basically a playoff, a postseason juggernaut. And yeah, but that's for next week. Let's move on. The thing is, imagine the Cardinals and the Falcons, that game, like the 2015 Cardinals against the 2016 Falcons in that NFC Championship game. A different Falcons team, because guess what? They did not have the strength, that strong, strong defense that Carolina did. That probably would have been one of the – I mean, you see the Green Bay game with Kurt Warner and Aaron Rodgers. Could you imagine Carson Palmer with the year that he had against Matt Ryan and the year he had this year? Just the amount of points that would have been put on the board, especially after, you know, no Tyrann Mathieu for the Cardinals at that point, but against a defense that really is serviceable at best for Atlanta. What kind of a game would we have gotten? Because I think it probably would have been. I thought the first team to 40 was going to win this game, and it still was the case. It's just, you know, Green Bay didn't get anywhere near 40.
No, no, they didn't. And Green Bay wasn't a very good team. And you know, they played their best game against a young Dallas team and came away, you know, and Aaron Rodgers came away with the victory in that game. But he couldn't do it against a more complete team and a more complete effort.
So let's moving on from the playoffs. Next up on Rise Up Sea Red, we've got some interesting comments from Bruce Arians in an interview with Dan Bickley. So that's we'll talk about that. You've got Carson Palmer, and maybe he's not returning. Larry Fitzgerald, training camp, all that next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and the next subject to discuss would be Dan Bickley, which is, you know, for writers like us, it turned into a lot of content to discuss and to write about. Dan Bickley from Arizona Sports 98.7, ArizonaSports.com, and from AZCentral.com, the Arizona Republic, spoke to Bruce Arians over the weekend and basically caught up with him. They're basically everything. He's got a torn rotator cuff. He's golfing. But it hurts. and you know, it looks like he's just going to live with that for a while. But here are some interesting tidbits that come from that. One, Carson Palmer still hasn't told the team what he's doing for next year. It's possible he retires. Larry Fitzgerald still hasn't made his decision, although Bruce Arians suggests that he believes that Larry's getting the itch. Training camp. His team fooled him, and he went too light in training camp. He talks about some specific players. Robert Condici believes he's going to be great. He talks about quarterbacks in the NFL draft. As of right now, no one jumps out on the page, at least what he's saying. No one that really jumps out of the page for him. So it's going to be interesting to think. So what was in this column, this article, which we turned into a lot of different little type of topics, which one stood out to you the most?
I think the unknown for his star players, right? And it's not like a shot at Arians or anything, but I just think the fact that these guys are beat up and tired is what it kind of boils down to, right?
Yeah. Well, and the whole Carson Palmer thing, Dan Bickley was very, very smart about this. He caught the fire. He hadn't heard from Palmer, and he says not to pull the fire alarm, but he kind of did. Palmer came out and said, at my age, this is what I always do. I always take this time off, and at my age, nothing's a sure thing. I want to play, but it depends on how my body recovers. And so there's nothing new here. That's probably the same thing he said a year ago, although it was much more certain. I mean, like you said, if he doesn't come back this year, there's money he's got to give back, which
no. Who wants to give back money?
Nobody wants to. I mean, he's got lots of money. I mean, he's got more money than he can handle. Even back in Cincinnati, back when he supposedly retired, the reported comment to someone he was close to was that, you know, he's got $80 million in the bank. He doesn't need football. I mean, he doesn't need to play for Cincinnati for that mess anymore. And he's gotten paid again. So, you know, but this is about Carson Palmer and his health. I'm not too worried about it. Other than, well, what if his body doesn't recover? Because he got hit a lot this last year, more so than each of the last two seasons when he saw great gains in his play.
Yeah, and so, you know, you have that. I think the comments that we're going to get into in a little bit about the free agents that, he wants to sign all of them back. I go back and forth on this. Why? I get the Calais Campbell and Chandler Jones and probably maybe Kevin Minter you can talk me into, but like at what point do you say, okay, like these guys weren't enough to get us over the hump, and then we regressed in 2016, so where are we completely in these, with these guys? Like, are there upgrades available even on the roster, right? Like, are there guys that are available that are a little better? So that's the question I have. But going back to Fitz and Palmer, like, the whole thing is at their age, and you've hit on this quite a bit, is it's not so much the physical, because the grind physically is never going to change. It's the mental grind, and do they want to put their bodies through it again? Palmer's gotten the crap kicked out of him the last 2 years. Is he up for it again? That's a decision that's very personal to people, and that only they can make. So.
Well, and it's apparently the latest thing is that's happening with Ben Roethlisberger right now. You never thought that was going to happen, but we already saw it happen. Kurt Warner surprised the Cardinals, and it was his family. It was that gruesome hit that he took in the playoffs, and it really scared. Well, that and between that and the expectation, he alluded to it in his farewell speech, and then later on, it comes to a point where you play at such a high level for a long time that the expectation is there. No one celebrates it anymore. You play at such a high level, you know you can, but are you willing to maintain the level of preparation that it takes to do that because of that mental toll? And Palmer, I never got any sort of, in all the interactions that you see from Palmer, I don't think there's so much the mental grind for him. I think his decision is one that is physical, because he is a football junkie. I am fascinated every time I listen to him talk, even a little bit of X's and O's, just how excited he gets. You see him, he enjoys talking about practice and sights and techniques and footwork. He loves that. Larry Fitzgerald, just my opinion this year, looked and talked like a tired man. And I'm sure the losing was really tough for him. Will he come back this next year? I couldn't give you that. I wouldn't be surprised either way. Like I said this before on the show, but you know, if Palmer decided to hang it up, that would be a big surprise for me.
Yeah, it would be. And it'd be, you know, it'd be devastating to the team. It's not that it wouldn't be that, you know, they couldn't find a way to piecemeal it together, but I think you're in the same situation that the Cardinals were this season, because they went 8-8 that season, or did they go 5-11 that season? I can't remember.
In 2010, they went 5-11 with that mess of Derek Anderson and Max Hall, and it was 8-8 they went the next year when
Kevin Cobb, John Skelton,
and John Skelton, and then Skelton let him down, because it was when their defense finally started clicking.
Yeah, so you know, defense
started clicking.
You look at it, you know, it's just one of those, it's one of those games where, or it's one of those things where if it happens, their lack of whether it be ability or desire to find a young quarterback will come back and bite them in the butt. And it's something that we've talked about for a very long time, in that the reality was always that this was a potential occurrence, right? So we knew that this could happen. So why weren't they, you know, being prepared? And you know, it's unfortunate, but it also kind of is what it is.
Right. And at least this year, now it's tough to say what will eventually happen, but at least this year, the Cardinals are at least in a position draft-wise that if Palmer decides that he's done, the Cardinals will have the ability. Now, and if you listen to local radio here in the Phoenix area, you know there is one quarterback that one particular radio host has been pounding the table for, saying that he is, you know, he keeps hearing that the Cardinals love Mike Glennon. Like, they love him. That's the guy they want. Now, obviously, if Carson Palmer is still on the team, it becomes virtually impossible to sign him, because you have to figure he's with the, you know, the 1 year of tape that he's got, the 19-9 touchdown interception ratio. The Cardinals reportedly really liked him coming out of college. Someone's going to throw money at him. The Cardinals will be unable to throw money at him if Carson Palmer's around, and they won't even be able to offer him a starting position.
Yeah, that's why. And this is like, I want to phrase this properly so I don't, you know, say anything too negative about him. But this is why when Mike Jarecki reports things like the Cardinals will, how did he phrase it? Pursue or have interest or, you know, something of Mike Glennon. I'm like, well, that's not really a story, because they're like you just said, unless they know Carson Palmer's retiring, why on earth would Mike Glennon come here? Like,
right.
They can't pay him the 10 plus million a year they're looking at. If they do, it's an incredibly terrible usage of assets. And, you know, they can't offer him. Does he want, like, what does it tell you if a guy says, I'll go sit again, you know, like I'll go sit behind Carson Palmer for at least 1 year, maybe 2 years. So I don't know. That's just, the reports, like, cause all that means is then the Cardinals make a call to the agent. The agent says, oh yeah, we talked with the Cardinals. It just wasn't a fit. And then that, you know, insider report is accurate.
But at least with the high draft pick, there's the potential that they could draft a guy they like, or they're close enough that a trade up isn't completely unreasonable where it costs them an entire draft. That's still something that they're most likely going to consider heading into this draft, regardless of what the situation with Palmer. If Palmer's here, then yes. If there's a quarterback there, or a quarterback that they like, that's even three or four picks of up, they're going to – they have to pull the trigger this year, because if they bounce back, they do well. Carson Palmer then retires, and they're picking in the late 20s or even, you know, 31, 32, and Drew Stanton's a free agent, then they've really put themselves in a bad position to where either they have to sign a guy you don't want to sign. You know, they pull a Kevin Cobb, they sign a Matt Flynn, they do something like that, and you end up in a bad situation. So, you know, this is really precarious moving forward, because the 2016 season, you know, especially the way they ended, there's intrigue, because I believe people, fans, the team believe they can bounce back and be every bit as good as they were in 2014 and 2015 and can compete. But if there's no Carson Palmer, guess what? There's no shot.
Right? Like, that's a tough one. If they, I mean, could it happen? I guess, right? I just don't see it. Maybe you and I just don't want to see it, though.
But here's the next one. Larry Fitzgerald, we know what we're talking about, but here's one of the comments that this is actually the one that stood out to me. It's Bruce Arians reflecting and going all the way back to training camp. You know, he believed that the team, a real veteran team, was ready for this year. They were ready for the season. And so he took the preseason lightly, especially with his starters and his veterans. He held veterans out of practice in training camp. He was really light. It was a case of, we just got to get healthy. We just got to be healthy. We got to avoid injury to get to the season, because that's what everyone's waiting for. And then they weren't ready. They weren't ready. That, you know, we talked about in the preseason about, well, are you worried? Well, should we be worried? Oh, no, it's just the preseason. But then it happened in the regular season, and Arians lamented his, you know, handling training camp the way it was. He was trying to protect players, and he said, you got to take that risk. And here's the comment for me. Look at the New England Patriots, who started their fourth preseason game. Tom Brady. And where are they now? And now in that case, that's because Brady needed the reps. They were giving Garoppolo the reps early on because they knew Brady was going to be suspended. But they didn't just let Brady sit. They made sure that he got game reps in the preseason, even behind their garbage line against just – and I don't like to – I Scrubs is very disrespectful to that. But
guys that are potentially going at a different speed. Right. And could potentially hurt the greatest quarterback of all time in a meaningless. Exactly.
Scrub is a fan word, and I understand. But when you actually end up knowing people in the NFL and you meet these players who don't make it, and you see the heart and the desire they have, and it's hard. You know, you're a scrub. No, they're not a scrub. They're just not quite good enough for the NFL.
So, but here's the thing, and that's kind of the difference between Belichick and everybody else, right, is that, you know, you hit on it. They have Jimmy Garoppolo. They drafted Jacoby Brissett. And then they make Tom Brady play in the fourth preseason game to make sure he gets reps. Like, this, whether it was, you know, season one or season, what is it, 16 now, they treat, you know, those guys the same. They make them continue to play, and they don't give them veterans days off every, 3 days or whatever it is, you know, and they don't hold back, and they don't, you know, like, they have two young quarterbacks that they've invested in, and they're saying we have to get Tom Brady the reps he needs before the season starts because he's not going to play when the regular season starts. Like, we haven't seen that from Arians, and I think he acknowledges that he made that mistake, and I think that's big of him because, you know, one of the things that'd be easy to do would be to blame the players. Well, you know, I gave them the rope and they hung themselves. You know, that would be the easy thing to do. The hard thing would be to do is say, look, I expected more of them. They didn't produce, and I didn't adjust what I was doing. And so he, you know, so him stepping up and saying, look, I went too easy on them. It was too much of a country club atmosphere. That, you know, that's big.
And it's the truth. I mean,
it was. I mean, outside of Tyrann Mathieu coming back, I mean, maybe, I mean, it really started with Evan Mathis, and this isn't a shot at Mathis. He's one of the toughest guys I've ever seen in the NFL. But, you know, he was basically immobile for most of training camp, right, with his ankle injuries and recovering from his ankles. And but they still kind of had him penciled in as the starter.
Yeah. He was one of those guys that were just, oh, we got to get it there. And well, and that was one of those things is that they had guys who had an injury history that they were counting on. Tyvon Branch, Evan Mathis, and then later Mike Jenkins when they signed him. And it's just, you know, that's what happened. Talking NFL drafts, he says he's head of the scene, so he's now in Mobile, so they're there for the Senior Bowl. And talk about quarterbacks. They say it's an offseason priority to, you know, to find Carson Palmer's eventual replacement. And he says he's intrigued by the throwing arms of 4 to 5 prospects. He sees a lot of athleticism, but isn't sure if there's a quarterback out there. That's an interesting comment. I'd have to go back and look at comments before now. Because I think at this point, even at this point in the draft process, the last couple of years, he already said that there's a couple of guys there that he thinks are that he thinks are quarterbacks, and then there's other guys he has to wait and see on. And so to say that now, either, you know, that someone threw out, you know, in the Coach Arians speak in his lying about the draft is that maybe there's someone he really likes and he's just not giving going on, or maybe it's truly he doesn't see a lot of pro come in year one, because that's the guy that he's had, that he's coached. Peyton Manning, Roethlisberger, year one. Andrew Luck, year one. There's no one that's ready to play in the NFL right now.
No. And that's why I think, you know, I'm kind of on the Pat Mahomes bandwagon. Like, that's who I'd like them to draft. I don't think he's going to be there at 45, the more I listen and talk to people. So, you know, that makes it difficult. Do you trade back? And because this is a pretty talent, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, there's talent at the top.
There's definitely some talent at the top. There's especially at some of the skill positions. They've got some big time safeties, some cornerbacks. You know,
I don't know if there's a disparity from the guy they could get at 13 to the guy they could get it in the 20s, if that's what they wanted to do, to get an extra pick or something of that nature. So, you know,
or simply there's a quarterback they like, but they don't like him. It's maybe 13's too rich for him, and then they'd rather pick him at 17 or 18. I don't know. When it comes to quarterback, don't play around with that, especially since they've seen what's happened each of the last 2 years. The Steelers have traded up over them, or the two of the last 3 years, and
gotten the Steelers really good players.
Yes, and the Steelers might be looking for a quarterback themselves this offseason. Maybe, possibly. And, you know, that's what the next couple months are going to be about. We're going to learn a lot about we're going to hear about the Senior Bowl quarterbacks, we're gonna you know, construct and deconstruct every draft prospect. You know, this is where we're gonna see some guys start to their draft stock's gonna rise, in meteoric fashion for no particular reason at all. And we're gonna see guys like Deshaun Watson picked apart to no end. This is the time of year where Matt Barkley goes from being, top 10 pick to a fourth round pick, and how Blaine Gabbert ends up being a top 10 pick himself. So, oh, this is going to be fun over the next little bit.
Oh yeah, it'll be a good time. I'm still a big Deshaun Watson fan. I think if Arians wasn't the coach, it'd be more in the realm of possibility. But the only guys I see really fitting Arian's style are Kaiser and Mahomes. So, everybody else will be interesting to see from there what happens. I don't think they're going to have a shot at Trubisky based on what I've read and some of the people I've spoken with. So we'll see on that. But I don't think they'll have a shot at Trubisky.
Bruce Arians guarantees that his team will tackle better next year and believes that Robert Kendiche will be a great player. I can buy that on Kendiche. I don't know how you can guarantee as your team's going to tackle better unless you make personnel changes or you change your practice habits, which are difficult to do because of the collective bargaining agreement. That's which makes it really difficult to maybe unless they're going to be more physical in camp and do more hitting than they did.
And they should, but whatever. But I'm kind of with you on that. Like, how do you say you're going to tackle better next year? Like, that's one of those like, hey, let's not talk about it. Let's show me about it.
I mean, Kevin Minter, maybe that means they're letting go of Kevin Minter, or maybe that's because Tyrann Mathieu will actually be able to play at full speed. Who knows? That's tough. But I think, was there anything else from that commentary, that Arians conversation that stuck out to you? I think aside from the whole, torn rotator cuff, I'm not a golfer. I've been golfing once. It's just, I'm no good at it. I'm okay not golfing. So.
Exactly. So
survive with the torn rotator cuff, but I don't know.
Yeah.
But exactly. He's old. He tore his rotator cuff because of a hug.
Yeah, don't break a rib on him next time.
All right, so let's move on to the final segment. This is on the last segment of Rise of Sea Red. We're going to talk about free agency again, as we did last week. Last week we talked about who the free agents were. Do we keep them? Do we leave them? This time it's salary cap. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on Rise of Sea Red for the final segment of the show, and we're going to talk about salary cap, potential salary cap casualties. This is a fun time to talk about this time of year, as we're still a little bit away from the actual free agency. And so we can look at space, how much are they going to have. Seth wrote a piece about it, potential cuts. I think he had seven players on his list, and I did as well. I've set seven potential salary cap casualties for the Cardinals in the offseason. And there's a lot of players on the two lists that you look. If you look at not a ton of they have one, two, three, four players who can save them each at least $3 million against the cap. And so of those four, I think we're going to guarantee one of them. If I'm looking ahead of what the Cardinals want to do for next year, I think only one of them happens. And so you've got four players here's your four players who could save them the most. You've got Justin Bethel, got $5.25 million cap hit for 2016, but cutting him, you'd save $3.75 million. Evan Branch, His cap hit for 2017 is $4.2 million. Cutting him saves the Cardinals nearly $3.7 million. Jared Vildier, left tackle, $10 billion salary cap hit. Dead money would be $6.5 million, so they'd save $3.5 million. And the other guy is Corey Peters. His cap hit for next season is going to be $3.67 million. His dead money is kind of low, though we'll save $3 million against the cap for him. If you had to pick one of those guys, who would be the one that would get let go?
Tyvon Branch. I mean, that's got to be the answer, right?
That's what I say. I think that's definitely the one for two reasons. One, got a small amount of dead money. And if you look at the Cardinals' positions at safety, they're going to have Tyrann Mathieu back. And I think they're going to make it a priority. It sounds like, since Tony Jefferson is on there, is on their radar, bring back either Tony Jefferson or DJ Swearinger. If that's the case, you've got Justin Bethel there. Can you afford to have your third safety, who has a history of injuries recently, you pay him? Can you have him eating up more than $4 billion of the cap when you can just – okay, you're not going to necessarily need them in 2017, especially with the emergence of Justin Bethel, who maybe he becomes your Tyrann Mathieu – safety blanket, the security blanket there, like they did this year. They tried to grab a few players who could play in the slot, and none of them stuck. But Justin Bethel showed that maybe he could be the guy to do it. I think Tyvon Branch is if I had to pick a lock for cap cuts, it's got to be him.
Yeah. I mean, it's just what, like, cuts are one of those weird things to me, because I would cut him tomorrow, but then you kind of have to wait, right? Because you still need bodies at the safety position. So if you can't re-sign Swearinger or Jefferson, then you kind of have to have Branch in the house, right? Like, you can't cut Branch, you can't cut Bethel, and then not have people in place for them. Wouldn't you agree with that?
That's absolutely true. I mean, that's probably the thing. Tyvon Branch is gone. If they bring back, if they bring back either Jefferson or Swearinger, or two, they sign another safety. But he is a concern. He had the same injury twice.
Yeah.
In the same season, after the second time after having surgery.
And he's never been healthy.
I thought for him it was a lock late in the season. So this is before, after the New Orleans game, I thought this was a lock. Justin Bethel wasn't going to be with the team next year. I'm not so sure now. I think his emergence in the slot, plus the fact that they can get rid of Tyvon Branch, I think Justin Bethel probably sticks around, because at least, one, he can play in the slot. Two, he's still a dynamic special teams player. And I still don't think he's done as a potential starter at the other quarterback position.
No, and I still think that he's going to have a chance to play in that slot as Mathieu works himself back in, and be kind of like the dime back. And then if they want to have Mathieu playing a little rover or safety, he'll play the slot corner. I think we found that that's his best position as defensive back.
And you get to see him make plays. Here's the next guy, Jared Vildier. This is crazy talk, right? Salary cap hit. You could cut him. Ooh.
It is, and it's not. It is, because they don't have an answer at right tackle, because Earl Watford didn't step up. Blake Murphy, one of the contributors at Revenge of the Birds, wrote about that today, and he wrote that, you know, Earl Watford was kind of a bust, and I've got people on here saying Earl Watford was not a bust. He played multiple positions. Well, he played multiple positions and then was replaced at multiple positions. Like, and I'm not trying to be mean. Like, you and I have talked numerous times about Watford and that we hoped that he would, you know, become the man at some position. And we even hypothesized that maybe he could overtake DJ Humphries this offseason. And it just never come to fruition. I mean, it's just never happened. In the end, he's getting replaced by John Wetzel and Ehrlich John at starting positions. So it is what it is at that point. You know, I always have trouble calling a fourth round pick a bust, but I also think that you can't call it a hit because he never really produced for you.
That's the thing. He was valuable depth in terms of a guy who developed. He never turned the corner. He showed flashes. I mean, the first two games last year, people were ready for him to, in 2015, they were ready for him to start over Bobby Massey. He was really hit and miss. That athleticism.
And I just don't think he's going to be re-signed. So that's kind of the mark of a good draft pick. If there's no injuries involved, does he get a second contract? And I don't know if he will.
And that's why, you know, it's fine. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the thing. So Jared Belair, they could have, if they need the space, but this, here's the thing. That looks bad in the locker room. Thing that, you know, the first Lyle Sundlein cut, that was tough in the locker room because he was a captain and had the respect of every single player in there. He ended up coming back and doing well, reasonably well, but Veldheer is their rock. He's their anchor. I mean, that's what they traded for. They traded him to anchor that line. Cutting him would look bad. Now, DJ Humphries gives them promise at left tackle. But, I mean, they could do it. They could lean on a guy that they've got already. They don't have an answer, but they could sign somebody. They could draft somebody. So they're looking for that, but I think there's like 0% chance this happens. But they could do it. And the Cardinals of the past probably would.
Yeah, I don't think they will because I think they're going to – here's the other thing. And I talked about this with Tyler Nickel today in a text message. And I said they're in a weird position because they have to show Larry Fitzgerald that they're still committed to making a run in 2017. But how much do they want to commit without knowing what Larry Fitzgerald's going to do? Especially exactly. especially now where they're like, what's going on with Carson Palmer? So, you know, they're in a weird position because if Fitz and Palmer were to both retire, cleaning house with Veldheer and maybe a Upati would probably not be the worst idea in the world.
Except that you'd get your next year's quarterback killed.
Yeah. Well, then you'd have to really reinvest in a young offensive line and hope DJ Humphrey's strides at the end of the year were accurate and not, you know, not, we're not being overlooked, or over, what's the, what, you know, overinflated. But, you know, I think it's, like you said, I think it's too dangerous if you're trying to make a run. If you're in a complete teardown rebuild, I think you have to keep one of Upati or Veldheer, but that's the point where you begin to see where cutting them makes sense. But until we have information on Palmer and Fitzgerald, it doesn't make sense to cut them, but it's at least a conversation that needs to be had while there are these unknowns about Palmer and Fitzgerald. Because then, you know, like I said, maybe it does make sense from a financial standpoint to cut them.
Corey Peters, another guy that he was a very important player on that defensive line. He was exactly, I think he was exactly the player they thought he was going, they were going to get. However, for 2017, he is due to count against the cap almost $3.7 million. Won't be all that much. And so they could save $3 million against the cap. Now, the issue is he was perhaps the most consistent player on that defensive line at the same time. And he's a veteran, so he's a good and he's a hard worker. He was praised a lot by Bruce Arians. However, look at they've got young guys they want to play. You got Rodney Gunter. You've got Xavier Williams. You've got Olsen Pierre. And you even got Robert Kimdichie. Now, granted, you know, Xavier Williams and Rodney Gunter could play the role that he played, at least in the starting and the base, in the base defense. In their 3-4 when they're actually using a real nose tackle. You know, but that's it seems like it would be an unwise move in terms of what you're trying to do if you're trying to have success in 2017. But they've got young talent they want to play.
They do, and they have to start playing these guys. But in the same way, you can't cut him until Calais Campbell's fixed, right?
Right.
So
you can't get rid of all the veterans because the veterans right. in the room are Calais Campbell, Frosty Rucker, and Corey Peters. Frosty Rucker, questionable whether he comes back. Calais Campbell, questionable if he comes back. Corey Peters under contract. What if they lose the other two guys? Then you've only got one veteran leader. Now, you could bring in a veteran, but they weren't already leaders in the locker room. So that's a different story.
Exactly. So, you know, you want to at least keep some of your vets intact and in-house. Because, again, you're still going for it. Until you're not going for it, you're still going for it.
The next guy, Drew Stanton, they could save $2 million if they let go of him. Now, are they getting rid of Drew Stanton? Not unless Palmer is coming back and they decide their future quarterback is not a quarterback that they draft, but a quarterback they go after, like a Mike Glennon. If Mike Glennon is on their radar and Carson Palmer returns, that means no more Drew Stanton. If Carson Palmer retires and their target isn't someone in the free agent market, Drew Stanton enters 2017 as the starter, so never mind. But there's $2 million to be had there if they want.
Bruce Arians is still alive, right?
Which means Drew Stanton's his dude.
Yeah, so Drew Stanton will be here. But, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I always think it would make sense, but they're never going to do it.
And then the guys after now we're in the sub $1 million savings. We both put Troy Nicholas on the list. The cutting him could save nearly $970,000. He was the last guy on my list. You added Kareem Martin, $710,000, and Ed Stinson, $690,000. Now we're reaching the territory of guys who – you know, their place on the roster, they have value in the offseason. There's value to have them in camp to compete. And then if they don't, you know, if they aren't good enough to make the team, then you cut them. But if you're looking to nickel and dime here and there, maybe they are just done. Because Ed Stinson did absolutely zero and was injured and then inactive the last basically half of the season. Troy Nicholas has yet to finish a season. So you look at those guys, you think, well, they're going to need to fill their roster out anyway for the offseason. But if there's not going to be significant savings, but there are some savings you could make.
Yeah, and so I think there's some moves that have to be made. I think there's some moves that need to be freed up. But one of the commenters on Revenge of the Birds brought up the fact that Nicholas can be cut during training camp and they save all that money. So he's a cheap kind of placeholder until they have somebody that can beat him out for the 53-man roster, right? With MoMA's injury history and Hakeem Vallis not actually being very good. And the fact, again, they don't have Jermaine Gresham or Darren Fells. Their tight end room is basically Troy Nicholas at this point. So if you cut him now, it doesn't – yeah, it helps financially, but it doesn't help financially because you're probably going to have to pay double that to get somebody in here. I've talked about O.J. Howard, but he could possibly be gone before they pick at 13. So
that's very true.
So maybe, we'll see what happens. we'll see, where this goes and how that works out. But he's definitely a guy. He's definitely a guy that I think is one of those that can be cut. It's just a matter of who you have in his place.
Yeah, and the same thing with Stinson. I don't think I wouldn't see any of them make cut just for salary cap. The only reason I would see them perhaps. Troy Nicholas is the one guy I think on both of them is if they are, because you can cut players in the offseason with injuries. You can't do it once training camp starts. So if they see that injury is going to be an issue moving forward and that's going to impede their ability to play, that's the only reason I would see that would happen. But if they, they manage to stay healthy and they, Stinson surprises, it seems, every single year. He shows up in training camp, flashes just enough, does well to start the season and kind of fizzles out towards the end. But there's value for guys like those. But in terms of the salary cap, yeah, we've probably hit them safe. So if you're looking ahead towards this offseason, how many cap cuts do you think there are going to be? Because I think there's only going to be one.
Just Tyvon.
Probably, and it might not even be any, right?
Yeah, because again, they can't cut Tyvon Branch until they know what's going to happen with DJ Swearinger or Tony Jefferson. Like they have to. Like you can't go into the season with your safeties being Tyvon Branch, Tyrann Mathieu, and Harlan Miller. So
sure you can. Championship.
So yeah, so you look at that and. Yeah, I mean, there really is nobody they can cut, huh? Like, there's not anybody they can cut until they make some signings first, and then they can clear up some more cap room.
And, maybe that's the route they need to go. But it looks like we're kind of pretty much set. Let me take a look here on the calendar. I'm looking forward to some shows. That probably brings us to the end of this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red show. I believe next week we will have another show. It will be, I'm sure there will be Cardinal stuff to talk about, but next week will be about Super Bowl. So it'll be a little less Cardinal centric unless there's news, which maybe there will be because I like it when there's news. I like it when there's Cardinal stuff to talk about. Don't you?
Oh yeah. Hopefully something interesting happens soon.
Like a Chandler Jones contract extension or a Calais Campbell signing. That'd be fantastic. So that'll wrap it up for this edition of Rise Up Sea Red. You can find us if you haven't. Obviously, you found us now. But if you're looking to subscribe, you can follow us on each of our websites at revengeofthebirds.com and at cardswire.com. You can find us through Blog Talk Radio and find us there, as that's the host of our podcast. On Facebook, Rise Up Sea Red, Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red, and other places where you can download podcasts. We're on iTunes, we're on Google Play, we're on Stitcher Radio. That's Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, and I'm Jesse from CarnesWare.com, and this wraps up this edition of Rise Up Sea Red. We'll talk again next week, and go Cardinals!
Have a good night, everybody.